Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Greg Benton from the Myelin Project. So tell me a little bit about the Myelin Project.
Yeah, so we were established in 1989 by Augusto and Michaela Adone for their son Lorenzo, who suffered from adrenoleukodystrophy, which is a genetic demyelinating brain disorder. And their struggle was actually dramatized in a film in 1992 called Lorenzo's Oil, named after the treatment that the parents came up with on their own. And the treatment is now kind of adopted throughout the world. And our focus is to advance research for ALD, to advance advocacy, and also provide family support to low-income families that are struggling to afford the cost of care for their ALD patients.
So, how does the condition typically affect a person?
Well, there's different phenotypes, so the disease presents itself in different ways. In the most extreme form, cerebral XALD, the child will be affected at a very, very young age, and basically the symptoms will be loss of sight, hyperactivity, often commonly misdiagnosed with ADHD, and it's just kind of a very quick progression to a vegetative state, and usually death within the age of anywhere from 4 to 8 years old. And then there's the adult form of ALD called AMN, which presents itself in a little bit later in life, around the ages of anywhere from about 25 to 35, symptoms can start to develop, and it is kind of a similar progression into that vegetative state, but it's just a little bit slower.
So you mentioned there are some treatment options. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. So if the disease is detected as a child, for instance, I mentioned we are advocates of newborn screening. We find it to be highly important because if the disease is detected before the onset of symptoms, there is the possibility of having a bone marrow transplant, which is obviously not a light thing to consider, but it has proven to, in many cases, to stop the progression of the disease. And then, as I mentioned, Lorenzo's oil is for some people has shown to slow the onset of symptoms, but has not been shown to actually stop the progression. So, at this point, the most promising treatment is the bone marrow transplant.
So, in your time with the project, have there been any challenges that you've seen?
Yeah, well, fundraising is always a challenge. You know, when you're an orphan, disease, it only affects one in, 17,000 people. It can be hard to kind of get the word out, to get kind of popular support from the general public, and to raise money. Other challenges. I guess not the fact that we haven't found a cure yet is definitely a challenge, but medical advances are so that there is hope, and we are hopeful, and that someday soon we'll find a cure.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the project, has there been any success moment that stood out for you?
Yeah, I would say in our recent history, I would say our success moment was last year. We sponsored a bill in the state of California that requires all babies in California to get screened for adrenoleukodystrophy dystrophy. And as I had mentioned, the significance is that if the disease is caught early, before the onset of symptoms, a transplant can be performed and can stop the progression of the disease. So in about September of 2014, the governor of the state of California signed the bill into law, making California the third or fourth state in the United States to pass a similar legislation to screen newborns for ALD. And currently we're working to lobby on the federal level to add ALD to the called the Recommended Uniform Screening Panel, which is the kind of federal list that basically advises states on what they should be screening newborns for. I would say that is the passing the law in California was probably our greatest success in recent times.
So, if you could send any one message about the need for screening and awareness of this condition, what would you say?
I would say that a simple test at birth can save countless lives, and something that we ought to do universally, and it can it's something that's very cost-effective in the long term. Yes, there is a cost for the actual test to be performed, but the long-term saving from being able to treat a child before the onset of symptoms is much better than the converse of having to care for a child who has a very progressed, a lot of progressed symptoms.
Does your organization maintain close ties with the medical community?
Yes, we do. We do indeed. We are a part of a consortium called ALD Connect, which was formed by doctors specializing in ALD, Dr. Florian Eichler at Mass Gen, Dr. Keith Van Heren at Stanford University. And the idea of the consortium was to kind of connect patients with doctors and to kind of expand access to treatment. And other than that, yes, we do. We attend many conferences. The United Leukodystrophy Foundation is an annual conference, and they invite several researchers and doctors in the field. I would say yes, we do keep very close contact with the medical community, and specifically the ALD and AMN researchers, specialists, and care providers.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a second, that'd be great. Next up, we'll hear from Marie Romandia, a woman with a learning disability who's found a unique outlet to express her talents.
So tell me a little bit about your condition.
Got a learning disability.
Of what sort?
It just impacts on how I think about things and how I do things on a day-to-day basis.
Now, you found a creative outlet that it's helped you express life with your disability. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, I do photography. It really has helped, because other things I just don't find I really enjoy doing besides this.
So how has it impacted you overall? Has it had its therapeutic properties? Or?
Oh, yeah. Every time I go out and shoot, I feel extremely happy anytime like I see the outcome of my pictures.
And how does the community respond to your work?
Everybody loves it. And I'm really happy that people love my work because it gets me motivated and throughout the day, and it makes me want to keep taking pictures.
So if you could send any one message to those out there with learning disabilities such as yourself about the need for them to find expression, what would you say?
I would say find something you love doing and don't let your disability hold you back, because you just can't let anything like that hold you back in life, because you only live once and you really gotta live it your life to the fullest, and you really gotta take life as it comes, you know?
So, have there been any supports that have helped you in the process of dealing with your own condition?
Absolutely. My mom and dad are always there for me, and they've always told me, like, why don't you go to school for photography? And I always told them, like, I was always worried, like, something was going to happen, but they've always pushed me in this direction. I'm finally following it now.
Thank you very much.
For more information about Marie's work, visit facebook.com/MNRphotographs. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
As we head into the summer outdoor recreation season, lightning awareness becomes even more important, and Environment Canada has research and new tools to help prepare Canadians. The majority of injuries and fatalities are caused by ground current and side flash events, not direct lightning. The Canadian Lightning Danger Map is a new tool that displays high-risk areas in red, with animations showing the movement of storms. If you realize you are in a lightning danger area, take shelter immediately, preferably in a house or all-metal vehicle. Do not take shelter under a tree. Lightning tends to strike taller objects. Remember, there is no safe place outdoors during a thunderstorm. For more information and tools for lightning safety, visit weather.gc.ca. When thunder roars, go indoors.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Greg Benton from the Mile End Project and Marie Romandia, photographer with a learning disability. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Mayor of Sarnia, Mike Bradley. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with the Mayor's Initiative and other disability employment incentives.
Well, it started, the Mayor's Initiative started in 2010 in Sarnia and has been a success across the province. And now, as we move into the fall of this year, we'll be looking to relaunch it. The original title of it was To Do the Right Thing, and that was the message to mayors and councils across the province. But over the years, we've learned that this really isn't about just doing the right thing. It's about doing the smart thing, and that'll be the theme of the new Mayor's Challenge launched this fall, that this is an opportunity to put people to work who will bring great contributions to any organization. And in Sarnia's case, we continue to break some of the barriers that exist, including setting up a new program here called Breaking Barriers to Business, which helps business, particularly restaurants and other service businesses in the tourism field, open their doors to being fully accessible, and then noting that on a website. And the program has been so successful, the province is looking to adopt it for across the province.
So with the new Mayor's Initiative, what modifications are being made?
I'm sorry, Cameron, I just missed that part of the question.
With the new Mayor's Initiative, what changes are being made from the existing model?
Well, it's going to be more aggressive. I don't think we have to justify that it's the charitable thing to do. It's really more about here's an opportunity for every town, city, county that wants to get involved to renew their workforce, bring a workforce that is very capable and educated into their organization by looking outside some of the rules that used to exist, that you need cities to be flexible, you need them to be considered and caring when you're looking at employment. And where Sarnia has been the most successful is on the student side. We have a large number of students who are challenged each year working for us. In fact, they start this coming Monday, July 6th, and they will bring great contributions to our workforce over the summer months. And that, in turn, gives them some work history they can take forward if they want to attend community college in one of the special programs.
So, in terms of the businesses themselves, how are they encouraged to embrace individuals with disabilities, so to speak?
Well, how they're approached is, this is not, again, charity. This is about, do you want to improve your business? Do you want more people coming through your door if you make it more accessible? And it's amazing how many restaurants in particular, while they may think they're accessible, truly are not, either by the stools they have or about the size of the doors. So there's some very simple things that can be done. And that's how we're trying to educate. We've had a number of businesses that have opened up their doors to engagement with the Breaking Barriers for Business program so that they can understand that there's some simple things they can do that can make their place more accessible. We, and then can, in turn, can advertise that on the website. But where it really fits in with business growth is that there's a huge market for disability tourism. And what we're trying to do here in Sarnia Lambton is make ourselves a model for other places in this province and country, that you can bring in more customers, you can bring in guaranteed business if you can just think outside some of the traditional ways of dealing with accessibility. There are too many consultants in the accessibility field who are telling companies and businesses and individuals they've got to spend a lot of money to become accessible. It doesn't always have to be that way. There are low-cost solutions.
So, if you could send any one message about the need for these improvements, what would it be?
It would be to be practical, to be reasonable, and to see a really good opportunity for to grow your business and to bring a different atmosphere to how you operate as a business. I think there's just a common set of values that develops from anyone who's recognized the accessibility market and the accessibility employment factor. It empowers them, and in turn it empowers the consumer who get the benefit of a business that has a different element to it.
So, how does the community respond to these incentives?
Well, the community's been very responsive, particularly when we got the business community to lead the way. Because if it's government simply telling businesses they must do that, there's usually a negative reaction. In this case, it was a partnership between the city, community living, and the Chamber of Commerce. And the Chamber of Commerce now has taken the lead and taken it to their entire membership across the province as an opportunity for them. So it's got to be business-driven to make it real to other businesses who speak the same language. And in the general community, it's been very well received. It's upped our game as a caring, compassionate community.
So, to speculate, if the model is successful in the province, do you see it expanding outward, beyond?
I would hope so. I would hope so. You know, I think there's much more awareness out there today about the benefits of employment and of people who got disabilities or challenged, but we got a long way to go. So the more we can do, the more we can push it beyond the provincial level. You know, some of the things happening in Sarnia are being looked at internationally, which is a real coup to the people involved at the local level. But we got a lot more to be done to make sure that anyone who wants to work has that opportunity.
So, what's been the greatest success that you've seen with the initiative?
I would think in the area of student employment, because it's something that every community does, and all you need to do is have employers open their eyes as it relates to bringing challenged or disabled individuals in as students. It then sensitizes the workforce. It demonstrates success, and we've had nothing but success with our program, because the key is that the employer provider has to make sure that skills are there for the person that we are employing. So that has been the area that we're the most proud of, and it's the one that's easiest to take to other communities to sell.
So, what are the next immediate steps for the initiative?
Well, we'll relaunch it in the fall of this year, and then there'll be a toolkit, a municipal toolkit, that will go out to service providers like community living across the province. And we'll also be sending that toolkit to municipalities across the province in the hope that it will spur them on to see there are very simple steps to take as it relates to employment, and it can be done. And these are the things we have learned that will make your journey on this very much, much, much easier than it was for us.
So, since this initiative is based on partnerships, have you seen that other communities have taken it as much to heart as Sarnia has?
Well, some have. Some have not. Some of the larger cities still seem to be very bureaucratic in their approach and trying to break down those barriers. I'm in the process right now of trying to arrange a meeting with the mayor of Toronto, the largest city in the province. Other smaller communities have actually come on board much quicker, maybe because they don't have the same bureaucracy or the same obstacles. But it really depends on the culture in the community. It's very easy to say no and then not worry about it. There's really no negative payback. But the ones that have embraced it, I think, have demonstrated that there's great benefit to them.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Thank you.
Mike touched upon two very important points during the interview. First, partnerships are the key to improving things for people with disabilities. Having the right idea, the right values, the right motivation is fine. But keeping it to yourself, keeping this notion of equality just locked inside, it's not doing anybody any good. Well, it might benefit the people in your immediate circle, but once you recognize the need for equality, usually it's accompanied by this sense that it should be a universal principle. Inclusion should never be an afterthought. It should happen simply because it happens. It should be in a place in this day and age where people just, in their business practices, their social practices, they just welcome people with disabilities without treating it as I must do this because it's something that I have to do. And he was absolutely right when he said that if it's government mandated in business practices, that is accompanied by a negative sense generally, because people feel they have to do it. But when a business owner recognizes that it has benefit, that it has real value, it's much more likely they'll embrace the concept. It should happen automatically. The recognition that these people have just as much right to work as anyone else. They have just as much potential to add something to the company, or to be a client, or to be a consumer. But also, he was absolutely right in saying this is not charity. This has to be meaningful. It has to be that this work matters.
Someone once said, the best way to create improvement is to tell somebody something can't be done. For a person with a disability, this is a fact of life. Many times, they take what was once considered impossible, fly right in the face of it. In years past, people with disabilities wouldn't have been able to join the workforce as easily. There wouldn't have been opportunities created for them. Certainly, businesses wouldn't have been encouraged to welcome such people. But times have changed. Our understanding is now at a place where we recognize disability is, yes, an important part of life, but it is not the all-defining factor of a person. Because they learn a little differently, or walk a little differently, or don't walk at all, doesn't mean they can't be a good retail person, good lawyer, insurance adjuster, doctor, any fact of life. Their potential is just the same as anyone else's. We as a society need to stop limiting ourselves and our thinking. it is a matter of thinking outside the stereotypes and perceived norms of society. It's about asking ourselves, what can be achieved today? And then taking that achievement, saying, this is what I accomplished today. How can I build on that tomorrow? And that's why these initiatives are so amazing. Because they're not just saying, we've developed a system that works, ain't we great? They're saying, we've developed something that works for us, and it can work for you too. And we want to see equality as something that's truly embraced. We want to see people truly taking the steps to build a society of understanding and inclusion. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HANDILINK, the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. While building the basis for these initiatives is a time-consuming process, I maintain it's a matter of monitoring, of making sure that the proposals, the concepts developed, don't just drop away. Coming up with real, concrete, and yes, even timely plans is the key. Saying, I want to get these steps underway within a month. And then saying, the next step will be this, this, and this. Specifics, planning, it's what it's all about. And working with the community. Finding out what the needs really are. Groups like Disability Rights Promotion International, they do a great job of this. They send people out into communities all over the world just to find out what the issues are, what the real needs are. Once you understand that and have as many perspectives as possible, you can start working on building a meaningful infrastructure. It can't be simply one day you dash off a proposal to get things done. Could be the greatest proposal in the world. But if you don't make sure, if you don't take the right steps, it's not going to matter. Getting the word out about equality is important. Individuals with disabilities should embrace these concepts. For those who have lived a life of fear, it tells them that they can't achieve, that they can't do this or that. It can be a difficult transition. Once you take that first step outside your comfort zone, once you make that first move, recognize your own strength, then the other steps get that much easier. For once a person with a disability recognizes they do, in fact, have talents, then becomes a process of saying, I did this, and what else can I do? Testing one's limits, finding one's strengths, that's what it's all about, folks. Truth is, a person with a disability is never to be underestimated. They all have potentials. They should all be given the opportunities to succeed, to create, and just to bring something meaningful to the world. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.